I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Well, I really want to welcome now Taylor Ann Bradford to Connections. Taylor Ann Bradford, of course, a Gloucester Times journalist. And Taylor Ann, welcome to MSO. How long have you been with the Times now?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm actually coming up my one-year anniversary next month. So I was with the Gloucester Daily Times since December of last year, and prior to that worked for the Salem News as a part-time reporter.
Sometimes when people come in, especially fresh and young, as you are, it takes a little while to get to know the community, but you're a North Shore resident, so I'm guessing your experience with the Salem News, living in the area, you pretty much could hit the ground running when you came to the Gloucester Times.
You know, it surprises me. I grew up, you know, traveling the trails in Gloucester with my friends, and, you know, it wasn't really, though, until I became a reporter that I realized how dedicated people in the city are about their city. So while I am a native, or at least a neighboring native, I came in and I learned so much within the past couple of months, almost a year that I've been working within the city. So it's been a pleasure, and I'm learning so much from the people that I speak to every day.
When I moved to Gloucester, I learned about what the island mentality means, and I think right. You're right. Gloucester residents are very protective of Cape Ann and the North Shore in general. Well, I know it's too late to say welcome, but welcome anyway. We sort of want to talk about some of the things that you've been seeing and covering, and what we do is try to get a little more detail or a little more storyline, because sometimes in the paper, sometimes it gets lost in translation. You only have so much time. You only have so much ink. And, you know, I know with the labor issue right now, all that's going on, it's very difficult. So what I want to start with is something that's near and dear to my heart, because I live in West Gloucester, and that is the issue ongoing with the commuter trains, the commuter rail service in Gloucester. And maybe you could summarize a little bit about where that situation is and why it is what it is. It's got something to do with restructuring a bridge or something further into town.
Right, yeah. So I guess the question is, what part of the narrative do we want to touch on first? So the MBTA has been working on the Gloucester drawbridge, has a reconstruction project that's been going on for a few years and will have a few more years to go. And so what that has done is they're going to be replacing that bridge that goes over the Annisquam. And so when they started that project and realized that they were going to have to shut down both of the tracks, is that they decided that West Gloucester was going to be the end of the line, so to say. And then you go, as Gloucester natives say, you know, up the line back to the South Shore. And so when that happened, the trains began idling a lot. There's this frustration with the residents of just the noise complaint and just how these trains were idling at all hours of the day, and what that looked like. And so the first story really is, you know, the drawbridge project and what that means, and, you know, the great bridge that is yet to come. The second narrative is that, you know, there has been some rocky relationships between the residents of West Gloucester and the MBTA as they do this project, just because it seemed as if people who were operating the trains weren't listening to their managers, and they were parking the trains and letting them idle in places that were disrupting people's sleep and work habits, especially during COVID when we're having so many people and kids working from home. It really changed the game in a negative way for these people. And so they've been speaking with Bruce Tarr's office, with the MBTA, and I've had the opportunity to go to a couple of those site meetings where, you know, you could tell people were really frustrated, but there was a lot of conversation on both ends. So I guess, Rick, that's the first MBTA story that was really in the books and that we kind of worked to flesh out, is like, how are they going to improve this relationship? Because a lot of residents were saying that MBTA has not been a good neighbor and just hasn't been respectful. And so that has been a conversation that is still ongoing. Obviously, trains can't not make noise. That's, you know, they have to do the bells and the whistles and all those things up to protocol, and the engines got to run. But when people are, you know, losing sleep and not able to be as productive as work, then there becomes the problem of character of the neighborhood and the well-being of everyone who lives in that area. And so I guess that that brings us to where we are now is the MBTA, due to the lack of ridership during, because of the pandemic, they're cutting the weekend trains. They're cutting the weekend trains from, the Rockport line and all, you know, all of their other ones, as they're trying to figure out how to make up a deficit that was caused by the lack of ridership. And so, you know, I spoke with the people who are, you know, just as frustrated about the trains idling, as they said, you know, at this point, is they're frustrated about the noise of the MBTA trains, but, you know, what's the bigger problem is the fact that while they wish the trains wouldn't make as much noise, now they're saying, you know, well, we want the trains on the weekends because we acknowledge that there's people who don't have access to, mm-hmm. to the train that they need to get to work, Rick. You know, and that's yeah. the question is, how are these people going to get, you know, people who work in Boston, who work, you know, further down the line, up the line, how are they going to get to the work on the weekends when the train was their source?
So are they thinking of canceling the Rockport line altogether on the weekend? Is that it? So there would be no train to Boston, essentially, from Cape Ann on the weekend?
Correct. So the commuter service, so to kind of give you a nut graft of the details, is so because they have to make up a nearly $580 million budget gap that was caused by the pandemic, they're looking to cancel all weekend commuter services all over.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that would mean, no one would be able to drive in or out through the trains. They'd also, on the weekdays, the services would end after 9 p.m. And I don't know if you know the Pride Crossing station in Beverly on Rockport, Newburyport line, you know, that cute little one over in the fancy part of Beverly, mm-hmm. That is going to be nixed altogether. So they're making huge cuts, to try to make up the deficit that they have because of the pandemic. And they said it's temporary. So in terms of the weekend services, it's a temporary cut for now. But really, people don't believe that. The people that I spoke to, at least, really aren't in trusting of the MBTA mm-hmm. to make those calls, because they said once you make those cuts, it's really hard to bring them back when when you're able to save a little bit more money here, a little bit more money there. People are saying that, you know, that they don't see that it's going to be going back to the way it was, you know, pre-pandemic.
All right, well, this is ongoing, and that's something we'll have to keep our eye on. Hey, I'm really impressed with the way you learned the lingo about up the line. That's impressive. I got to tell you, that's a Gloucester colloquialism that I'm still trying to figure out all these years later, but that's pretty cool. Got it.
Thank you.
Very good. You know, you mentioned COVID. We can't get away from COVID. It's just affected everything, and I wonder what's your eagle eye view from your coverage in terms of how things are going, maybe with respect to either the citizens, residents, or businesses or schools from what you've seen.
Yeah, so when it comes to COVID in the city of Gloucester, when it first started trickling over to the Seaside community, I started interviewing people. And I think the kids said it best when I interviewed them was, you know, if one of us gets it, we're all going to get it, just because it is such a close-knit community. And so, you know, I was kind of keeping my eye out for that when COVID started, the cases started popping up, because you never know, and the neighboring communities, they really seem to spark pretty fast. But here in Gloucester, they did a rather good job of, you know, they're doing their mitigation plan. Karen Carroll, the public health director, worked with the mayor and, you know, the businesses and the schools to try to figure out ways in which to keep things running and keep businesses and schools functioning to a way that was effective for everybody, but also making those safety measures. And so when it comes to businesses, they're really trying to figure out how to make businesses be able to function as normal as possible. And so, you know, the summer was great because they had that outdoor seating. They had the opportunity to spread out onto Main Street if they wanted. Now with the colder months, it's getting a little bit trickier. But what I've been so surprised by, Rick, is the number of businesses that have opened in the city since the pandemic started. I think I've done 3 or 4 stories on new restaurants that are specifically focused on takeout, and they're restaurants that are really focused on things that the city doesn't have, like fried chicken, like Indian cuisine, like these things that I think the city has wanted for a while. And people are acknowledging that, you know, well, we can do takeout and we can bring people comfort food. And so I think people are getting really creative when it comes to trying to function in the time of COVID. So that's businesses. In terms of schools, you know, it's so interesting because there's this balance of, it's a lose-lose situation for everybody, because if the kids aren't in the classroom, then they're not getting that social emotional connections that, you know, they would in the classroom. They're not getting that opportunity to engage personally with their peers, with their teachers. But if they're in the classroom, there's always going to be that risk of contamination. And so either one is really tricky. So within the Gloucester, they rolled out a hybrid model, and it's different for all different schools. But as of right now, every school is hybrid in a manner of respect. But obviously their neighboring towns might not be that. Like Manchester, Essex, they have their elementary schools are hybrid, but they're still, their middle school and high school are still remote since last March. So imagine those kids who are, you know, in their senior year aren't able to do the celebrations that they wanted to for right. their senior year. I mean, my brother was a senior this year in high school, and he lost so many great memories. And so I think parents and students alike in the, you know, Manchester, Essex are really longing to have that connection, you know, that, you know, maybe their parents had in high school, and they want their kids to have the same. So, but we did have a spike to get back to just what COVID, Gloucester did have a spike, and they reached pretty high numbers. They went into the red, but when they saw that, they kind of shut everything down and said, okay, let's reorient, let's figure it out. And now that was like 70 cases, and now they're back, you know, to 8 or 10, 15, really bringing it back to those lower numbers. And so even when we see spikes within the school districts, within the businesses, within the areas here in the city, it seems that once they get high numbers, they're able to bring them down pretty quickly. So I think that there's a pretty good pulse of how to maintain the spread, but I mean, Rick, I don't know about you, but I think everyone's trying to figure out what the winter months are going to look like wherever you live here.
Hey, as long as
the city of Gloucester or wherever else.
As long as I can ski, I'll be okay, but even that is iffy. No. Hey, listen, you mentioned new businesses, which that is remarkable. We did test out the Little Red Rooster the other day, the fried chicken place. Can you bring a Taco Bell? Can you get one in to Gloucester?
You know, I don't think the city wants that. You know, they're really into these mom and pop places. Okay. So I mean,
Good point.
Doritos tacos.
Yep.
That sound like something for you.
There you go. See, now that nails it. That absolutely nails it. You know, I have to ask you, when this thing first started, you know, we do talk with reporters from you know, from the Salem News and the Eagle Tribune and the Item and stuff. But initially, everything was done by phone because you couldn't go out. But I've seen you out there in the community, and are you sort of able to get back into a rhythm of getting out? Because it's I imagine it's delicate in terms of whom you're interviewing.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So I kind of go back and forth between going into the office and working from home. I think it's depending on what type of story I'm doing. You know, I think you had mentioned in one of our correspondents, you know, we kind of saw each other at one of the
right.
conversations at the train station as everyone was masked and trying to figure out how to be distant. And I can't get that type of color if I'm just, you know, working from home and right. someone's relaying the information to me. It's just not possible. And so, yeah, I have to be super careful in trying to figure out how to do my job and being able to, you know, accurately portray what's going on in the city, but also trying to stay safe myself. And so
of course.
I think that's not just reporters, that's everybody. Everyone's trying to figure out, because, you know, we want to connect with people. We want to have those conversations. So I think it just depends. I think as we get into the winter, I'll probably be working more remotely, as a lot of reporters probably will be, just because I'm sure things will spike. But also, yeah, as it gets colder, no one's going to want to have these, you know, socially distant meetings outside. And so I think there's just going to be a lot more Zoom calls going forward, which is unfortunate, but it's to the best and the safety of everybody.
Oh, yeah. So. Well, a couple of other quick comments, if I may. Got to ask you about your backgrounds. Journalism sort of in the family and in the blood?
It is. Yeah. So my father is a sports reporter. And actually had worked at the Gloucester Daily Times as the sports editor for some time. You know, I can tell you, Rick, right off the bat, I'm not a sports reporter. I'm really appreciative of what he does, and I'm very inspired by the work that he does for WEEI. But it is a hard job, and so, so although sports is not my thing, the curiosity of asking questions is, and I think that my dad, Rob, really taught me that growing up. And so what I learned, and then I went to Gordon College, graduated not too long ago, And yeah, and found myself just loving the cities in which I grew up in, and grateful to spend my early adulthood learning more about places that I didn't realize I had more to learn about. And so I'm constantly learning, whether it's, you know, down on Main Street or on the trails. So.
It's great to have that enthusiasm here, and you're working with some great people at the Times. I know that, and it's just tough right now with in terms of financial situation and with businesses. But love that enthusiasm, and don't be dissing sports now. And I know you weren't, but still, you know, that's our life's blood here at MSO, especially during high school football season. But at any rate, I know that I've seen you on 1623 Studios. There are many of your interviews with Heather Atwood and Corey Kukuru with reference to the Gloucester Times that are up on YouTube. But if you go to 1623 Studios, you can check in with Taylor Rand's conversations there. And of course, the Gloucester Times, you're in the, I don't know that you have any days off, even though the paper's not published twice a week. I get that, but
right.
No time. But so, are you a regular on 1623? And when do those interviews take place?
I am. So yeah, Heather and Corey are awesome. And so we film those on Thursdays, and then they go live on their website and on their Facebook page on Fridays, every Friday. So you guys can expect a quick update from both the Gloucester Daily Times and the Manchester Cricket. And we kind of give a little bit of pulse of, you know, kind of what we're doing right now. Rick is kind of giving the idea of what's been going on and what is to come. And so have really loved that opportunity to speak with them, get to know 1623 Studios, and, yeah, learn a new medium of storytelling. Honestly, you know, podcasts and video conference interviews are new to me. And so grateful for the patience and the excitement that they both have to work with Gloucester Daily Times.
Hey, final thing. Tell me about your column, your new column on Fridays.
Yeah. So that goes back to what my other passion is. Not only do I love working and writing behind a desk, but I love hiking trails. I was a backpacking guide for a couple of years before taking on the role of a journalist. And so Woods to the Writing Desk is a column we started over the Times not too long ago, when the pandemic really got bad. And I was having a hard time, you know, kind of getting a pulse in the city, and quickly realized that people are very comfortable. If you're able to socially distance and wear a mask, you can walk on a trail quite well. And so I've been walking on trails socially distanced with residents of the Gloucester area, and, you know, they will share their favorite trails with me, and then I'm able to write a fun little trail review on, you know, the hidden gems that we love in Gloucester. And, you know, hopefully inviting people into those trails, but also trying to teach proper maintenance and care, because I think, you know, the excitement to explore should always be coupled with care and maintenance. And so that's just been a really fun exploration, and, again, learning about places and nooks and crannies here in Cape Ann that I never even knew about. So that's been, yeah, some great friendships have been formed, some, you know, I've scuffed a knee here or there before while exploring a couple of the trails, but it's been fun. So that comes out on Fridays, and I'm working on one right now. So stay tuned for a really fun review on another person who people know as the Cape Ann Explorer. So excited to get to know other people who explore the trails just as much as I do.
Fantastic. That's Taylor Ann Bradford of the Gloucester Times. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.